Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The following program is a paid production from Mike Novak, LLC, which is a fancy way of saying that we really don't want to have much to do with this show. So, cause, you know, Novak spent a little bit too much time out in the garden, if you know what I mean. And NewsWeb Radio Company doesn't agree with most things he says. Especially when he talks about perennials. Oi!
In 1965, I did what is considered the greatest minute ad-lib in the history of television, because not only did it prove how powerful the medium was, but it got me thrown off the air. Now, I was always accused of saying a lot of other things, which I didn't, but this I did, because I thought it was 5 minutes before seven, and we were doing the show in the evening. It was New Year's Day night, and we were in a commercial, and the director comes over there and comes and says, when we come out, you're going to have a minute. What do you want to do? Well, I was writing all the shows, and I could save a bit for the next day. I would do it. So I said, I'll ad-lib some. So he knows I always work so close to the camera, closer than anybody else. So when it came out, I walked up to the camera and went, hey, kids, I said, last night was New Year's Eve and your mom and dad were out having a good time. And it's only right because they work hard all year long. They're probably still in the bedroom sleeping. I said, what I want you to do is tiptoe in the bedroom and don't wake them up. And you probably see your mom's pocketbook on the floor and your dad's pants, but don't wake them up. I said, I want you to go in your mom's pocketbook and your dad's pants and you'll see a lot of green pieces of paper with pictures of guys with beards. I said, why don't you, what I want you to do is take those green pieces of paper and you put them in an envelope, and on the envelope you write, Soupy Sales, Channel 5.
Do that.
New York, New York, and you know what I'm going to send you? A postcard from Puerto Rico.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes, and true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Now here's the man who's greening your world one kilohertz at a time, Mike Novak.
And, of course, that opening was in honor of the great Soupy Sales, who died this week. How sad is that? And I know a lot of you have no idea who Soupy Sales is.
I know who Soupy Sales is.
Really?
Was. I know who Soupy Sales was.
Now, how do you know, Heather?
I'm an old soul. I like old TV, and I learned about old broadcast medias and TV shows, Ed Sullivan and the Smothers Brothers and all that great stuff. Johnny Carson was the man.
Yeah, and way before, not even way before, because Johnny Carson was doing TV in the 50s, but Soupy Sales was also, and the reason I'm was a big fan is he got his big start in Detroit, where I grew up. I used to watch Soupy Sales, the Soupy Sales show in Detroit.
And
before
he did children's television, wasn't it? It was a
well, you know, that's a really good question. Was that children's television?
I don't know.
And that's the reason.
It wasn't Howdy Doody, that's for sure.
It was the reason my brother and I liked it so much, because it was subversive. It was, we knew, I mean, you could hear the guys always laughing in the background, and you knew something was going on. And the bits were out of control. And I've been looking at, I've been on YouTube for the last couple of days looking at a lot of the old Soupy Sales bits. And the wonderful thing about early television, it was so not slick. It was just out there, and he would go, and ah, and he would stammer, and but he was so funny. But there were these huge dead spots.
Right. And he was
It's like radio.
Right.
Like real radio. Just lots of dead spots.
Right.
Dead
but
air.
He wasn't either pioneer for the pie in the face.
Well, pies in the face go back a long way.
Yeah.
Come on, let's face it. The Three Stooges were doing it,
yeah.
And others before them. Pie in the face is
that was one of his
trademarks,
though.
It's a classic, but he was the guy who brought it to television. I think.
Well, God bless him for that.
Yeah, pies in the face, and they were talking about how many pies in the face he had taken over his career. Soupy Sales, yeah, that's what I liked about Soupy Sales is that he was. He was different. You said Howdy Doody and the other shows that were on them, Mickey Mouse Club, and I'm really dating myself here, but Kukul, Fran, and Ollie. Now, I don't even remember Kukul, Fran, and Ollie. I don't know if I ever watched it.
Yeah. Beanie and Cecil.
And that started in Chicago, didn't it? Kukul, Fran, and Ollie?
I believe so, yeah.
Well, Soupy Sales was so rocked.
Motor City.
Yeah, and he was so much funnier than Kukul, Fran, and Ollie could ever hope to be. It just was, that was, and I actually found some of the other Detroit shows that were online. Lots of good stuff came out of Detroit at that time. So a little later on, I'll play the Soupy Sales theme.
Fabulous.
Which has been running through my head all week, which is... Just shows you how sick I am. I mean, it's just...
It's nostalgia.
It's a little nostalgia. Welcome on a Sunday, the day after 350 day. Now, we got a phone call. You want to try giving that guy a call again? We're supposed to have the Phil Radford, Executive Director of Greenpeace USA, on the show. You know, here I am starting off with Soupy Sales, and yesterday was actually kind of serious. Well, not that serious, though. I mean, if you saw any of the news coverage, and there certainly was not enough news coverage of the march on Midwest Generation's Fisk coal plant in Chicago and some of the other activities in the area, you'd think 350 day never happened. But if you go to my website, mikenowak.net, and that's NOWAK.net. You'll see a picture of me up there at the march in Pilsen yesterday in the Pilsen neighborhood in Chicago. We held our signs and did our chants and walked over to the Fiscal fired plant. Did you leave a message there with him?
I left one message, and then I just had him page to our hotline number.
Ding, 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 ding. Wait, the hotline.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see.
It's not as cool as the Bat Phone, you know, like in the old Batman TV show, if we're going to date ourselves. That was one I used to love.
Uh-huh.
With the orange-red phone.
See, that's... That's so much later. You know? Let me give you my reaction to Batman when it came out, the TV show. My brother and I grew up reading comic books, like, you know, what guy, kid,
right.
Boy kid does not grow up reading comic books? And we read, Superman and Batman. We were huge Marvel fans. I was big Spider-Man. I think I said this on this program once. I used to have Hulk number one at one point.
Used to?
Oh, my God. I lost it years ago.
Oh,
I mean, it just disappeared. Who knows?
That's tragic.
I know.
You could buy your house with that.
Let me put it this way. It disappeared 30 years ago, okay? So,
bummer.
But I did have my, and he was gray, of course.
Yeah.
He was gray at first, not green.
The Batman comics were much darker than the actual TV show.
Well, that's it. And when the TV show came out, my brother and I were so disappointed. It was not what we expected or wanted. It was camp.
Right.
Because it was the 60s.
Right. But, oh, my God, it had some of the best lines in television. Like, you know.
Well, yeah, but we still never grew to love the show.
Well, like, Batman and Robin, I remember, like, being, you know, they bite onto something and get, they're tied up and they get pulled out by their teeth. Or, you know, Batman pulls Robin out of the trap by Robin biting down. And, like, they get up in the Batcopter and he's like, see, Robin, good dental hygiene. That's just classic television right there.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, who wrote this?
This is why I didn't like it. All right. So it wasn't dark enough for me. So it wasn't until the Dark Knight series came out that was Batman.
That's good stuff.
That's Batman. Back to environmental issues.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. We go down these
roads.
How was
the 350 Action Day? Were there a big turnout?
You know what? There were a couple hundred people, several hundred people. I was hoping there'd be several thousand.
Yeah.
And I had some people there say, explain it to me, and they said, you know, well, it was kind of drizzly this morning and cold. And I said, it's not a Cubs game. It's an action.
Right.
It's an environmental action. People who had, you know, do you think a little drizzle would stop marathoners?
Nope.
I don't think so. And I don't know how many were in the other. I wonder how many. I haven't talked to anybody who was out in DuPage. In fact, if anybody's listening who was out at the DuPage action, please give us a call. 773-838-9278. 773-838-WCPT. In fact, anybody who was at any action for 350.org, as you know, we talked about this last week. And if you go on my website, MikeNovak.net, and go to this week's show, there's a link to, well, and I've got some photos there from the action yesterday. I've also got a link to 350.org.
And aren't they?
And they've got lots of photos from all over the world.
That's
stuff. What was going on?
I heard they're going to play them in one of the giant electronic billboards in Times Square.
Yeah, they're supposed to do this in Times Square.
Cool.
And I don't know if it's happening now, today, whether it happened yesterday. Anybody who happened to be out at DuPage last week, yesterday, and that was Hawthorne Grove in Blackwell Forest Preserve in Warrenville. Last week I talked to Dave Lloyd about that. Give me a holler, 773-838-9278. So, yeah, we get out there, and the energy was good. There were several hundred of us at Pilsen. Alderman Joe Moore from the 49th Ward, the fighting 49th, was there. Oh, and there you are. If you go to, did you go to 350.org?
It's 350.org, and it's right there.
And they've got the Times Square, a YouTube video of Times Square showing the different photos from around the world. And the idea, of course, is to call attention to 350 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. How that is a tipping point for global warming, and how we're over that. I said 390. I was rounding off last week. I guess we're at 387. Who knows? You can't exactly.
That's
not
390.
It's in the ballpark. You know, it's pretty much the same thing. So there were actions all over the planet, including the one in Pilsen. And like I said, Alderman Joe Moore was there. Kim Wasserman was there from Little Village Environmental Justice Organization. And I met Phil Radford. See, this is the way these things happen sometimes. I'm marching with Phil Radford, who's the executive director of Greenpeace USA. And we're going down the street, and I said, hey, you should be on my show tomorrow. He said, absolutely. And he gives me his number, and he's sleeping right now, I'm
probably
sure.
Probably.
He's snoozing.
If they were out celebrating the success of the rally in the evening.
You know, I'm sure he's a serious guy. He never celebrates anything. You know how those Greenpeace guys are.
They drink the organic stuff. Everybody has to have fun.
Are you
sometime.
Saying they drink the organic Kool-Aid? Is
yeah,
that what you're saying?
Yeah, Kool-Aid,
no.
Sure.
Well, see, I wanted to talk to him about it. You know, that was going to be one of my questions. Was going to be about Greenpeace. I mean, they do so many different things.
I love
Greenpeace. They have so many different actions. And my question was going to be, are they as cheerless as they seem? Are they as serious as they seem? You know, if you go to Grist, are you familiar with grist.org?
Yes.
Okay. You go to Grist and there's humor there.
Yeah.
Everything is tongue in cheek. And if you haven't, folks, if you haven't gone to grist.org, GRIST.org, if you want to get your environmentalism with a dose of humor,
right,
this is where you go. In fact, it's not just humor. What I love about them is they put everything in perspective. So if I need a perspective on an issue, that's where I go. I go to grist.org.
And that's how you like it, because, you know, you get to the point where it's like, It's almost like they're trying to scare you to get you involved.
Well, but that's one of the knocks on the environmental movement is that,
but I understand
is that it's
why.
Just gloom and doom all the time, 24/7.
Right. So, exactly. To get it with a little humor is kind of refreshing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's what we do on this show.
Yeah.
You know?
Eco Elvis. No one else.
No one else has Eco Elvis. As a regular part of their show.
Exactly.
And no one else talks soupy sales and then goes into environmentalism.
Right. and rallies. And
soupy sales,
and
Batman.
And his signs are here, folks. They're really good. They're right here.
Oh, that's right. And I brought in the signs.
They're 100% recycled materials, too. I can tell you that. It's an old stick implemented with some old cardboard and some, I take this as non-lead
paint. You don't know
paint.
What she's talking about. I have to explain
she's
it.
She's got his march sign.
That I brought from the march yesterday, brought it into the showcase studio here at WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, and it says, my sign says, what I like about mine, it's 350 ppm, and it's done in green paint, as you said, recycled cardboard, is on a stick. And it's the
classic.
Five, if you look at the five, it's dripping green, where it looks like it's bleeding green. I like the idea that my sign bleeding green. In fact, you can see my bleeding green sign on my website, because that's where I put it, right on the home page.
Yeah. I like that you put the PPM on there, too, the parts per million.
Well, I didn't do it. It was done. It was there.
These were ready for you when you arrived?
Yeah, I didn't
now,
do
that's
this.
An organization.
Oh, yeah. You know, you got to have your signs.
I mean, yeah, and they stapled it, too. No adhesive, no chemicals. Good stuff.
Yeah, that's the way you do it. So we, if anybody was out there in DuPage and part.
And
that's right. And this is the Greenpeace sign. It says stop. That's a little more professional. Stop global warming. www.projecthotseat.org. Let's go. Let's do that. Go to projecthotseat.org. I want to see what that is about too. But you can get more information on my website about the event yesterday. Now, if we don't get our Executive Director Phil Radford from Greenpeace, and I suspect we're not going to this morning. You know, those things happen. It was ad hoc. It was spur of the moment. I was going to get him quickly into the show. But you know what? I got so much to talk about anyway. And one of the things is, and this is also on my website, MikeNovak.net, this morning, is the Mayor Daley, I should say. I should show a little respect.
Really?
Careful there. He is still the mayor, at least until 2011. And he came out with his budget this week. And, of course, if you read anything about it, the idea is he's going to dip into the... Is that the same website? Does it go to Greenpeace?
Well, it's trying to load, and it keeps saying errors on page.
Oh. At the hotseat.org?
Yes.
Projecthotseat.org?
Yeah. It just pops up for a second.
Oh, wait. You're not typing it in, though. What are you doing? Type in www.projecthotseat.org. Oh, and it goes to Greenpeace. So there you go. And it, well, it's the same. Okay, right. I should have figured.
Well, look at the list. Is quite. I like Exxon Secrets. That one kind of intrigues me.
Oh, yeah, on the left side of the Greenpeace page, they have all of the projects that they're involved in. And like I said, there's a gazillion projects that Greenpeace is involved in. Exxon Secrets. Well, the secret is how to spill 17 million gallons of oil into the Gulf of Alaska and never have to pay a dime for it.
Right.
That's the secret.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm.
the secret I like. At any rate, back to Mayor Daley, who announced his budget, and he's going to dip into the parking fiasco fee.
Shocking.
To pay. It's the rainy day fee.
Mm.
And the rainy day comes not 30 years into the contract, the $1.15 billion contract, not 50 years into it. It comes 6 months into the contract, and the money that we were going to have for a long time, just in case something bad happened, gets used 6 months into the deal.
Oh, now they're considering selling more stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's his whole idea. He still wants to unload Midway. Let's dump Midway. Let's privatize the whole city. So, but he didn't go into specifics in his budget. He said some service. He's going to try to keep services going. It was.
Oh, you mean like police and firemen will still have those at the end of the
day? Well, they're probably not going to hire as many. Some will have to retire attrition. You know, it's all this juggling in the books. And one of the things was Blue Cart,
the recycling program that you're
budget director Eugene Munin hinted that the Streets and Sand might cut back pickups from once every 2 weeks to once every 3 weeks, and that they might discontinue the rollout of Blue Cart in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, it's not available everywhere yet.
Well, no, it's available to out of 600,000 units to about 240,000, so we're not even halfway there. And it looks like they might suspend it because of the budget crisis. So we're not going to get real recycling in the city.
If we had in theory gotten the Olympics, we were supposed to be, it was going to green up everything. So, and you know, everybody would recycle, everything would be available to everyone. So my curiosity is now that we're not getting the Olympics, why this can't continue anyway?
Well,
like, where would the funds come if the Olympics had arrived? Coca-Cola,
I don't know. The argument would have been made that there's money coming in because once you announce the Olympics, theoretically, people start climbing on board and start pumping money into projects that are going to go up that need to be constructed in that time frame leading up to the Olympics. Now, no Olympics, and who knows? But it looks as though they're going to cut back. City of Chicago is going to cut back on recycling, pick up the recycling once every 3 weeks instead of 2 weeks. And the problem I have with that is that, and I was quoted in the Sun-Times this week, because they come to me and they ask me these questions because I'm the president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition. And I said, well, we're telling folks to recycle more and we're going to pick up less. How does that make sense? What if recycling starts spilling out into the alleyways? Because people, and I know that, in fact, I would love to have people who live in the city of Chicago who have Blue Cart or who don't and want to weigh in on this question. Give me a call at 773-838-9278. What do you think about the city cutting back on Blue Cart? There's no way this can be a good thing. Is it a necessary thing? Do we not care that much about recycling? In the long run, see, you've got to understand that this is penny wise and pound foolish, because there are tipping fees involved in throwing garbage in the landfills. And if it's going into recycling, even though the market is, the bottom is falling out of the recycling market, but it's going to go back up. So you need to get the system in place so you're ready to take advantage of that when that happens. Let's face it, the economy is in bad shape, but everybody's in bad shape. That doesn't mean you don't set up your infrastructure to accommodate recycling, especially because, and we'll quote Dick Cheney here, the administration of Chicago has dithered for the last 20 years in terms of its recycling effort. First with the failed blue bag. And we were all very excited that city was moving on, bringing out blue carts. Well, they started, and they were being pretty aggressive about it this year, and I think that was in anticipation of it stopping mid-year or at the end of the year when the budget came out. So who knows what's going to happen with that, but I'd be interested in folks' opinion about blue carts in Chicago, even if you don't live in Chicago. And it's interesting because people who live in the burbs and come in, or people who live in other cities who come in, say, what is the deal with recycling in Chicago?
Because I live just outside the city, and they recycle everything, and they give us bags for yard waste. They give us bins for, all sorts of stuff, and they expanded the list to magazines and juice boxes.
Now, granted, very few cities are the size of Chicago, and it costs more to do it here because of the size, but we haven't even scratched the surface of recycling in this town. We've got 240,000 individual residences that have Blue Cart. The rest have to take them to drop-off centers, which means if you don't have a car, it's very difficult. And a lot of people just give up on it. And we haven't even addressed the multi-unit recycling in the city. The blue card is just for individual units of residences of 4 units or fewer. That's blue card. And then if it, you have more than 4 units, well, you've got a contract with the individual waste hauler.
Right.
Bernie is in Indiana. Yep. Is he commenting on
he's
blue
got,
card?
He's got some recycling questions or comments.
Okay. Bernie, you're on the Mike Novak Show. How are you doing this morning?
Don't we have to really tie this recycling to, like, what we flush in a toilet and it gets done? I mean, can you imagine right now they telling everybody, well, you're going to have to take all your waste and put it in the backyard because we can't afford to pay them. Aren't we supposed to start tying this recycling to the products that are produced in this country where I don't have to, I just take whatever I want to get rid of to the recycling or whatever you want to call it, you know. I mean, doesn't it have to be tied to something that's not a luxury?
Bernie, you're making a good point, actually, and the way I interpret what you're saying is, first of all, we have too much stuff. It doesn't start on the recycling end. It starts on the manufacturing end.
Absolutely.
We have too much plastic that we can't get rid of. We talked a couple of weeks ago about polystyrene, styrofoam, which,
right.
You know, the industry will tell you, yeah, it's 100% recyclable. What they don't tell you is, but there's no place you can take it. There's no
right.
place in your area that will recycle it. But don't worry, in 10 years, they'll be everywhere. Well, that means we've got 10 years more of polystyrene going into our landfills, and worse, into our lakes and streams, and worse, into the Pacific Gyre, where it floats around in a circle the size of Texas out in the Pacific Ocean, and where aquatic life can suck it up and die. You know?
Absolutely. It's like out west where they passed the laws on the plastic bags, and now with the legal muscle that these companies have now, they can beat these people down easily, whereas it's got to be done on the national level. I mean, it's absolutely nuts.
You know what, Bernie? We don't seem to have the will to even get a public option in our health care. Where are we going to find the will to reduce the packaging of our consumable goods? I don't.
You know, this is exactly what was rumbling in my head about the same thing with the health care. I mean, I just don't understand it. I mean, like, you know, like I have chemicals in my warehouse. What do I do with them? It's not on their list. What do I do with them?
You have a business, Bernie?
Right. I have a business in Chicago.
Okay. Now, are you able to get your chemicals recycled? I mean, are you telling me that there is no system for you?
Say something that gets old and you can't sell it anymore. Say, I have no idea what you can do with it. It's not the list of in recycling. So, you know, and to take it to some companies, you really can't trust them. You can't trust them they're going to take care of it properly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's not being taken serious enough. Rich Daley shouldn't even have to say something like that. That should be just like taking care of our waste from the toilet.
Well, I agree with you. My feeling is that it is a city service. Recycling is the same thing, as you say, as waste, as garbage pickup, as police, as fire. It should be the same kind of thing, if you ask me. I appreciate you calling, Bernie.
Thanks a lot.
Have a great day now.
Well, one company is trying to do something national. We were talking about Target last week, how they're now taking, if you bring in your reusable bags, they'll knock 5 cents off
for
each one you bring in.
I meant to link that story on my website, and I forgot.
But that's on the retailer end. That's not the manufacturer again, but at least someone's trying to do something, because they're a major retailer.
They are, and they give you a nickel for every, you know, but the problem is who's going to take advantage of that? What they need to do.
The conscientious consumer.
See, They're trying a carrot and stick, and I'm wondering if they got it kind of backward, because they give you a nickel off every time you bring in a bag. Well, how many bags are you going to bring in? Three? You're going to get 15 cents off total? What they need to do is charge you for the plastic they give you. Do it that way. Folks are not interested in a rebate. They're interested in paying less. All right. And if they're walking out with seven plastic bags, well, 35 cents, maybe they don't care. You know, but still, in the long run, charge them for that, and then take that money that you make on those bags, and then you put it toward an environmental project. I don't know.
Yep.
I'm not sure. Let's get Rick DeMille on the line. And later in the show, you know, I've done the environmental thing this morning, another environmental thing, and something gardeners might be interested in, and I know it's going to sound a little esoteric, compost. But compost is very interesting. I have Urban Worm Girl here. In fact, I think she's sitting in the green room waiting to come in. Well, that makes sense. Here, having a green room. Stephanie Davies is the Urban Worm Girl. She and her cohorts, and she will tell me about Urban Worm Girl. Lynn Bement, who's an old friend of mine, will be in after 9 o'clock. She is the compost queen. Christine Nye, the horticulturist at the Shedd Aquarium, will be here and talk about. She's used compost teas around the grounds of the Shedd Aquarium. And then Charles Martin of Terra Biotics in New Mexico has been doing this kind of thing for 40 years. And I'm going to get them all together. We're going to have a discussion, which may seem a little, as I said, look, if you're a gardener, compost is it. It's the basics. And that's why we're talking about it here today on the Mike Novak Show. Rick DeMille in about 60 seconds. Oh, wait a second. Is that Bernie? Are you back for a second?
Yeah, Mike, I'd like to, you know, they're talking like Target. They use it as, oh, I'm a good person, you know, and all that. Everything that comes in on pallets, I don't care in this country, it's tons. There is no way to recycle it. The plastic overwrap, every time a pallet is brought in, whatever it is, and we just have to throw it in the garbage. And that makes bags look like nothing.
Yeah. And you would know because you have a business that deals with pallets a lot, I take it.
Right, and there's none. And I'm out here in LaPorte County. They could do a good job, and they're recycling has really increased since they put the big blue cans, and every 2 weeks I fill that thing up. And
well, it's what they call film plastic, and film plastic is a little more difficult to deal with because there's so many different kinds, and it's part of the reason they don't let you put it in your regular recycling. It's not completely unrecyclable. It's just a different story. It seems to me it's like polystyrene. It's recyclable, but who's doing it? And how easy is it? It's not. There's not very many people doing it. You know, pretty much anything can be recycled if you put your mind to it and put the technology to it. The problem is we have not made it easy. We have not made it convenient for the public at large.
No. What we fail to do is you produce film overwrap to go around a pallet. And big deal, you save so much money versus the paper that you could use a paper or something, somebody develops it. What they have to do is either you produce something and you can't figure out how to recycle it, too bad, pal, go back to the drawing board.
We need to figure this out, but it's people like you in the business, Bernie. I think also it's the average citizen and people who are in business need to agitate for this. Obviously, you're concerned about it. That's step one. And I'm glad you are, and I appreciate you calling. Step two, you know, you have to get your fellow business people on board and put pressure on the people who make the stuff and figure out how to get it back into the system, how to recycle it.
This is why I'm a Democrat. It has to be government. It has to be Congress that has to look at this thing and say, we got a problem. We got some idiot producing something out in California, flooding the market. What are we going to do to get rid of it?
I'm not sure I agree with you 100% on that, Bernie. I feel like government has a role in this. But if we don't get on board as consumers, if we don't make the market work, it's not going to work. And you know, I don't think
See, it, I don't look at it as government. I look at it as Congress. Congress. They are the ones that have to be looking at all this pallet overwrap, and it's going into the dumps. They are the ones that should be aware of all this, not me. It's so difficult. How some guy's making a heck of a good living making pallet overwrap, and probably a lot of it's coming from China now, but it has to be Congress that has to be responsible for it.
Well, it's something to be said, and like I said earlier to you, if they don't have the will to even do single-payer health care, not even a public option, not even a strong public option, where are we going to find the will to address the RAP problem? Bernie, thank you for the call, and thanks for calling back. We'll get to Rick DeMaio in just 60 seconds. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. As we head into winter, don't forget that you can still be kind to your trees. Here are some ideas. Number one, mulch. It's always a good idea to surround your trees with a layer of organic mulch. Even in the winter, it holds in moisture and evens out the temperature extremes. At this point, you should wait until the ground freezes. Another thing you can do is to remove, and when I say the ground freezes and then put your mulch down, and then it keeps the temperature constant. Do be careful if you have a big pile of mulch out in the yard. And you're waiting till the ground freezes, sometimes the mulch pile freezes, which I've found. And then how do you get it? Although a mulch pile doesn't freeze as readily as the ground, well, the top of the ground, but it can happen. I know that people, they've saved their mulch, you know, until the ground, because they always tell you, put it around the tree when the ground freezes.
Now, there's a way to put it around the tree, though, because if you put it too close to the trunk, that's the volcano mulching that you hate so much.
Very good. And that's the other thing. Don't put it right up against the tree. Words of wisdom from Heather Fry.
I learned something hanging out with you.
That's it. That was the only thing. Another thing you could do is to remove diseased leaves from around the base of your tree, especially crab apples. And it was a bad year for crab apple scab disease, which is just a nasty... Even the term is nasty.
Yeah, it's
crab apple scab.
Yeah, it's a fungus, I assume?
I suppose it's as we get to Halloween, it's a good phrase to use. Anyway, they can reinfect a tree in the spring, so get rid of the potential problem now. Make sure you dispose of them, and don't put them into your compost pile, because that disease will be around next spring. Finally, leaves are nature's great source of nutrients. Shred healthy leaves and put them in the compost in your gardens or around your trees to decompose over the winter. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. They'll teach you about all this stuff. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. And, of course, it's the Soupy Sales theme, which means we bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. Have you ever been introduced with the Soupy Sales theme before, Rick?
This is the first. I love it.
Do you remember Soupy Sales?
Oh, of course, yeah. Don't forget, I grew up in New York, and oftentimes my grandfather would always talk about Arthur Godfrey and Milton Berle and Soupy Sales and all the great comics from the vaudeville era, and didn't Soupy Sales, wasn't his routine the pie in the face?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was the pie in the face. And you know, I guess he started in Cincinnati, went to Cleveland, but spent several years in Detroit, where I got to know him and watch him,
right.
And then hit the big time, ended up in New York in the 60s.
Right.
So
I guess if we're talking about Soupy Sales and the pie in the face, it's a good thing this is a radio show.
Well, you know what? That's what I was thinking. We needed to do something like that, but how would
you're
anybody
not
know?
Me with a pie.
No.
No.
No, I guess it would be me, though. I'm the show host.
Sure. Oh. I need a pie.
Well, in honor of Soupy Sales, Mike and Heather, I woke up this morning, got my coffee going, and realized that I had no half and half. The 2% milk is basically done, and I hate putting 2% in coffee. So what did I put in my coffee in honor of Soupy Sales was ready whipped cream whip.
You know, any
That's
old port
delicious.
In a store, ready whipped cream whip, huh?
It's real. It's made from real cream.
Yeah, I mean, it is. That's what they say. I don't know what real is, but I said to myself, you know what? You know what? In honor of Suzy Sales and in honor of cream in something, I put cream in my coffee. I put the, you know, ready whipped cream whip on my coffee. And you know what? It's pretty good. It's not the same, but I figure after my first cup of coffee and after I finish up my spiel with you, I'll walk down to the corner and get some real cream for my coffee. Yep. There's nothing worse than not having the coffee exactly the way you want on it.
I agree, Rick.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
I agree completely. Waking up in the morning and putting the coffee on, and then that frantic, if those of us who like cream in the coffee, that frantic search for cream, and then realizing that it's not there.
I'm a Coffee Mate snob now. I've like always have to have either my hazelnut Coffee Mate, now they've got the seasonal like pumpkin spice one.
Heather, I do the same thing. I'm a hazelnut Coffee Mate guy. Ever since my doctor said, Rick, your cholesterol is up a little bit high, and my brother said, go do the Coffee Mate hazelnut. Now that's all I'm doing, and it's awesome. Isn't
it's delicious. But then I end up drinking the whole pot inside, 2 hours.
See, here's the thing. I think you get that's frou-frou coffee. I do not drink frou-frou coffee.
Oh, and how do you take your coffee?
Well, just a little bit of cream in it. You know, that's it.
No sugar?
No. Mm-hmm. Just throw and you know, not Boston. You know, don't load it up. I just want enough just to cut the coffee a little bit. Just,
right,
you know?
Right. Well, you'll appreciate this because we're all talking coffee, and people listening are like, there's nothing better than listening to radio while you're drinking coffee. The other morning, I was super busy. I was running out of the house. I said to myself, okay, I'll do this thing where I'll bring, because I had like a long drive, I'll bring two, not just one, but two carrying mugs with me for coffee. Okay, so I did my normal work on the computer. I ran into the bathroom, getting dressed, blah, blah, blah. I got the whole coffee thing going. I come back in to the kitchen. Okay, I'm all ready to go, and I'm like, how come I don't see, like, a little bit of steam coming out of the pot? I forgot to press the button. Make the coffee thing work.
You know what's even worse than that is when you press the button to turn on the coffee and you forgot to put the water in.
I've done that.
Yeah.
That,
you're lucky the house doesn't catch on fire, you know?
I know. I had everything going, and now all of a sudden I have to push the button. I'm like, come on, let's go here. I got to go. And then I'm like pouring the coffee, and then I put too much in, and I put the top on, and the coffee spills off to the side. I was a mess that day. I was a mess from the word go.
And we're going to need it, too, aren't we? It's going to get cold, isn't it?
Yeah,
we're going to need that hot cup in the morning.
It's a little bit cool out there, Heather. We have temperatures currently in the low to mid-40s. But, you know, it's not too bad. I mean, this is kind of typical for this time of the year. And, you know, Mike, you were talking about soil temperatures. I'm looking at the soil temperature without any sod, okay, about 4 inches down. National Weather Service is reporting a 40-degree temperature in the soil. However, with sod, meaning that where you have your compost,
mm-hmm.
The Chicago Botanic Garden and National Weather Service is reporting the soil temperature of 57 degrees down at Romeoville and 54 up at the Botanical Garden. So it's kind of interesting when you get the compost over the soil this time of the year. It's amazing how much it keeps the soil warm. So
you can still plant stuff. Why trees and shrubs can still go into the ground right now because the soil is warm. It's going to stay that way, you know, unless we start getting zapped with really unusual freezing temperatures.
Yeah,
it's going to stay warm for a long time.
And, you know, and I don't see anything like that happening. In fact, the system that came through on Thursday and Friday, only, you know, 3 or 4 days out, the models were only predicting about a quarter inch of rain with this thing, but it got a little bit of subtropical moisture locked into it, and we ended up getting a healthy 2 to 2.5 inches of rain. And even though we got a lot of rain, it didn't produce any flooding. The ground was dry. It came down over a long period of time. This is what I call a great rain for this time of year. Extremely beneficial, gets all the way down into the root system. And Mike, you know as well as I do, and Heather as well, if you soak up that, if that soil can soak up that rain, it's much more difficult to freeze that, you know, that soil 3 or 4 inches down, because you then have to dry it out before you freeze it. So this is extremely beneficial for the soil. If people want to wait a couple of days and then start planting their bulbs for next year, Mike, this is perfect soil for it. So clouds this morning. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some sunshine probably in another couple of hours. And I think much of the day today is going to end up being dry. Even though there's a couple of sprinkles on the radar, I think the bulk of any precipitation and cloudiness is generally going to move to the east. So even though this is the weekend where people are probably trying to get some leaves raked up because we had a lot of wind blow the leaves off the trees, today's the better day, obviously, to do it because yesterday the leaves were probably on the wet side. So the colors to me, Mike, I haven't seen a fall foliage like this in many years. It's beautiful, a lot of nice yellows. The reds will probably come into play probably in another week or two.
You know, but I've seen lots of reds here, especially in the city, and I agree with you. I think the colors have just been spectacular. If anybody's got a color report from elsewhere in the state or Wisconsin that they were you haven't been up to Wisconsin, have you?
No, my family was last week, and they said it was stunning. They were there for their cranberry festival.
So
really, what part? What part
near Stone Lake, near Hayward, Wisconsin.
Oh my, that's way up there.
Yeah,
oh
it's about
God.
400 miles northwest.
Yeah, you're basically in southern Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
Up there.
Pretty much.
Oh, well, a stone's throw from Lake Superior.
I think she's more in like Manitoba.
yeah. Oh, my family's been going up there. My grandfather bought a plot there in the 1968.
Oh, wow.
So we've been going up for as long as I can remember, and they go up every autumn, and they just say it's breathtaking. And sadly,
oh, yeah.
I have yet to go in the autumn because I always work or have school or whatever.
Well,
so.
I think if you try to go for a leaf peeping, what they call it, as they call it back east, I think you're beyond that. All the leaves are basically...
You'd have to go in early September, wouldn't you?
Yeah. They actually reach peak about a week and a half early because they had such dry weather up there. But, Mike, if you remember the dry weather we had in the month of September, I really think that probably got the leaves to where they are right now. Usually a very, very dry period preceding the period when the leaves begin to lose all their chlorophyll. Usually it gets the leaf colors going. I think that's what probably got it going this autumn.
Well, they've just been spectacular. So, I was just going to say now, so today's not going to be too bad, but later in the week, from what I understand, it might be getting a little colder.
Not until probably Friday. We actually begin to warm up a little bit. We'll have sunshine this afternoon, temperatures probably mid-50s, probably mid to upper 50s tomorrow. Maybe a little patch of rain. There's a couple little systems moving through that may produce maybe a tenth of an inch of rain between now and Tuesday. But from what I can see, it doesn't really look too much on the cool side. In fact, it looks more on the warm side, with readings probably warming up close to 60 degrees on Tuesday. And then a fair amount of rain moves in for Wednesday and Thursday. It looks like Thursday is when we begin to cool off, and then we'll get back into the 40s. But otherwise, I think between now and probably Friday, normal high temperatures around 57, 58. I wouldn't be surprised if the five-day normal is probably about 2 degrees above average between now and Thursday. In addition to that, I wouldn't be surprised if Wednesday into Thursday we may actually get an additional 2 inches of rain. So it's been one of these patterns where we had a very wet spring, very, very wet beginning to summer. Then the second half of summer was very dry. Then we got a little bit of a wet pattern in September. Then we went completely dry in September. And then we got wet again in October. So we've been getting these blocks of three-week periods, wet, dry, wet, dry, wet, dry. And right now we're basically in somewhat of a wet pattern, Mike. So,
there's two questions, because I got something going during the day on Wednesday. When is that rain moving on Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday looks kind of problematic. It's not too clear when it gets here, but I do think the second half of the day on Wednesday looks wetter than the first half.
Okay,
Thursday definitely looks to be a stormy day, but Wednesday maybe the second half. But don't put that in stone and come back next week and say, Rick, you told me, because this is 3 days out, and the pattern is very dynamic right now.
Okay, and that, which means that you probably really can't give us a Halloween forecast either, can you?
Halloween right now looks kind of cool. I think Friday night, obviously, a lot of people do a lot of partying Friday night and also Saturday night as well. Usually Friday night you have these, you know, Halloween parties downtown where people come in and they just stay at work.
Rick, we're talking kids, all right? We got Heather in the room, all right?
I want to know which I have the warm costume and the cool costume. Which one should the boy wear?
I know. Chicago is one of those places where you wear your costume and your coat over it.
Right.
Especially
right
if you're 2 years old.
Yeah, right. And that mask with that little thin piece of rubber band that's trying to hold on to the staple end with it. And after like about three or four houses, it breaks and it's basically hanging off your face from one side to the other.
Exactly.
You know? And you're wearing this costume and you walk up to the door and the people go, well, who are you supposed to be? And I'm like, I'm Superman. Where's the damn candy at, you know? But I just love that when they go, what are you supposed to be? And then, I mean, I don't know. As a kid, it was like, it was the best thing in the world when people actually giving you candy for free. It's like, candy, candy, candy. My goal is to get more candy. And you always try to follow the one kid that has a rip in his bag, because all of a sudden you get to the end of the block, and he's got nothing in his bag, and you're picking everything up off the sidewalk.
You are, so here we are, Rick DeMaio.
He's got the strategy down.
Rick DeMaio, town bully.
You know. No, candy, or candy cohort.
Yes.
Yeah, candy cohort. I just love those things. What are you supposed to be? And they give you this little bag, and it's got like candy probably from last year or something like that. You know, I don't know. Those bitter honeys, right? Remember the bitter honeys that are like from like, you have like a born on date of like 1959, and they still work in your mouth. You know, if you get them going enough.
Armageddon will come, there'll still be styrofoam and bit of honey.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So you're saying the warm costume for Little Bill.
Yeah, it definitely looks like temperatures probably in the low to mid-50s. But you know what, again, Heather, that could change. The pattern is definitely much, much more active. The good thing, though, is we think we finally got it right, is we go all the way through next weekend, Mike and Heather, with daylight savings time on our side. So, meaning that the sun's not going to be setting until 6, whereas in previous years, it's setting at, like, what, 10 to 5?
Well, it's going to change back anyway. It's all manipulation, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And the only thing, good thing about that is when I come in here on Sunday morning, it'll be light at least.
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
It is rough.
All right, so we got a stormy week. It's don't count on anything in particular because it's just going to go back and forth and then get cooler and maybe rain. And
sounds like a Chicago autumn to me.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, it's definitely Mike and Heather, but the bottom line is nothing real cold coming back at us anytime soon.
Good.
So if anybody's worried about, you know, an early beginning to winter, nothing like that on horizon for at least the next 3 weeks.
That's Rick DeMaio. He does his weather forecast every Sunday at, sometimes at 8:30. Sometimes I don't get him on until 8:37, but, you know, that's
fine. No big deal.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's my show. I can do what I want. You know, it's not like I got to report to anybody about this.
You are the puppet master.
I am the puppet master, and he is Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com, or you can go to MikeNovak.net, NOWAK.net, and see Rick on there, and just click on. You can go right to his website. Lots of great features. Rick, we will talk next week.
Okay, bye, Mike and Heather, and happy Halloween.
To you too, Rick.
Since 1997, WRD Environmental has been creating healthy, sustainable landscapes that are both beautiful and responsible to future generations. You could say WRD is in the business of transformation. Sometimes it's through projects like the Lincoln Park South Pond, for which WRD is part of a team that is turning the zoo's popular pond into a model for sustainable landscape solutions, habitat restoration, and environmental learning. Other times it's through leadership and organizations like the Midwest Ecological Landscaping Association, which is working to green up the landscape industry so that sustainable design materials and methods are the professional standard. We have a couple of people from that organization here in just a few minutes. Sometimes the transformations are of people themselves. WRD is a partner with the Chicago Department of the Environment in managing Green Core Chicago, which provides job training in the green industry, electronics recycling, and home weatherization. For innovative, sustainable transformations, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology and online at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Planning a new home or starting a remodeling project? Let the light flow into every room with style and grace. Marvin Design Gallery by Estates Windows Limited knows that any room's appearance is greatly affected by its windows. Today's discerning homeowner looks for three things in a window purchase: quality, style, and energy savings. At Marvin Design Gallery, you'll find the unmatched quality of all wood frames, over 11,000 standard and custom window designs, plus the energy savings of wood construction and special glass treatments. Now you can see, touch, and operate over 70 window and door displays at their state-of-the-art showroom. Marvin Design Gallery is located in Lake Bluff at 930 North Shore Drive, on the web at marvinbyestates.com, or call 847-615-1003. That's 847-615-1003. Marvin Design Gallery, featuring that distinctive window that fills a room with light to make it something really special.
It's almost Halloween, so there's no doubt that fall is here and winter's not far behind. Your friends at Sid's Greenhouses want to remind you that time is running out if you plan to move the tropical houseplants from your deck or patio inside for winter. Now, Heather gave me grief about this the other day. She said, well, they're zapped. Well, guess what? I still have two of them outside, and they're doing just fine. Thank
really?
You very much. Yeah, they're fine. I'm
well,
in the
they're
city.
Novak plants.
Well, it's in the city. It's a little warmer. So
yeah.
There's still time to take care of them. And when you do, don't bring in any bugs or fungus with them or white flies, which are still out there floating around. Pre-treat the plants with Fertilome Triple Action Plus. It's an organic insecticide, miticide, and fungicide all in one. Then follow up with systemic houseplant insect control from Bonide to protect even new growth for up to 8 weeks. And if you do need to replace any of your plants, this is the week to do it with 25% savings on greenhouse plants from SIDS, including tropicals, lucky bamboo, herbs, and exotics, plus decorative ceramic pots and pottery to give your indoor garden a new look are buy one, get one free. SIDS has hundreds of styles and colors available. This week, you'll also save 75 off the entire stock of indoor fall and Halloween decor. That's 75% off. And check out SIDS Christmas Shop. Oh, my goodness, it's already here. Which is 30% off this week. SIDS Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Well, that's supposed to fire. Oh, I know why it didn't. Let's try this again. Boom. Snap your fingers. All together. And this is not to... And you know what? And I have just in time to introduce Urban Worm Girl, Stephanie Davies. How you doing, Steph?
Good, thank you.
I'm so glad you're here. And, you know, I have time to introduce you, and then we're going to go to a break. Go to the
okay.
Oh, wait a second. We don't
no,
have
there's
any...
no news. No.
We have no news.
The satellite is not working.
Well, then, you know what? We'll start the second big hour of the show, and then we don't even have to do news today. So, but Stephanie is Urban Worm Girl. I met you at Uncommon Ground.
That's right.
Earlier this year, and Uncommon Ground has these green room sessions, which they do every so often. And you gave a great pitch.
Well, thank you.
For vermiculture, which, well, I was like going to do a contest, but, you know, a lot of people don't know what it is. But explain in briefly what vermiculture is.
Well, in the briefest way, it's composting with worms. So vermiculture is the fancy term, and the lay term is, you know, learning how to compost with worms. Worms eat your garbage.
They do.
They're recyclers.
And the great thing about worms is that you can get them this time of year, bring them indoors, set up a worm composting system indoors, and do it all winter. Outside, you don't have to do it, you don't have to worry about just putting your scraps into a landfill.
Absolutely. This is something you can do year-round, and that's one of the reasons that I like to encourage people to get familiar with it, so that they don't feel like they have to stall out in their composting efforts. They can keep it going year-round.
Well, I tell you what, we're going into the 9 o'clock hour here. When we come back, you know, I want to know the origin of Urban Worm Girl. It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We need to start the second hour, so let's just do that.
Hey, welcome back. It's hour two of the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by the... You're listening to WCPT's Self-Help Sundays. 4 hours of home improvement help for inside and outside your home.
820 WCPT AM Willow Spring, 92.7 WCPT FM Arlington Heights, 92.5 FM WCPY DeKalb, and 99.9 FM WCPQ Park Forest.
Self-Help Sundays on WCPT AM and FM, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
See, and that's what happened. Somebody put a spell on the radio station. And that's, so we'll try this again. because I'm sure my sponsors would like to hear their billboard at the top of the hour.
Hey, welcome back. It's hour two of the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green gardening and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Here he is, once again, Mike Novak.
That's what I feel like inside right now. Just like that. That's how I feel. For all three of you who stuck around during the silence to the Mike Novak Show, thank you. And welcome. We were starting to talk to Urban Worm Girl here on Sunday morning, the 25th of October. The subject is vermiculture, vermicomposting. Why Urban Worm Girl? How did you get so involved? How long have you been doing this kind of thing?
I started Urban Worm Girl about 2.5 years ago as a company, and I've been composting with worms just a bit longer than that. That's how I learned the whole process and decided to bring it to the people, help educate the city especially.
Uh-huh. And there are more than one of you.
There are now more than one of us. I say that we're reproducing like the worms because the needs are there.
No, don't say that. That's just...
that's just weird, right?
That's just, it is.
It's okay.
It is just weird.
Working with worms is a little weird, too, so, you know.
Well, okay. I'm glad you said that. Because that takes us to a place where a lot of people listening to the show will say, oh, no, I could never do that. That's too gross. That's too messy. It's too difficult. Why do people want to work with worms?
Well, there's many reasons. First of all, I like to just say that the worms are really smart. I mean, learning about the wisdom of the worms really changes your outlook on and your perspective.
There's your book title.
The
Wisdom of the Worms.
You must be reading my mind.
Oh, really? Is that where you're going with that?
Well, no. We'll see. Maybe more to come on that thought.
Mm-hmm.
But
I want 5%. That's all I ask. Just 5%.
It was my idea first.
Yeah, but I pointed it out
there
on the radio.
So there you go.
We got all this.
We've got at least
four people listening to the show now. So that's, you know, and those four people are going to buy the book.
Well, that's good. I hope so.
What about the Wisdom of the Worms?
The Wisdom of the Worms. When I found out how smart these little guys are, and what they could do for me personally, what they could do for our planet, I just decided, like, this, we have to get past this weird factor, this gross factor, this ooh, are they smelly factor, and just really work with the worms. They are like our little recyclers on the planet, and I think the more that people understand their role, the more that we actually admire them versus think they're weird or gross.
This is something I say at garden talks all the time. What happens to people when they get older? When they're kids, they love worms, they love bugs. They, you know, just touch them, grab them, let them crawl on you, and then suddenly...
That was me as a kid, for sure.
But unlike most adults, you kept that.
I maybe returned to it. I absolutely found, like, the love of my childhood of playing in bugs, playing in dirt, playing in nature, again, as Urban Worm Girl. So I do think we all need to get a little dirty again. We need to get back into the earth to really have more of a connection with the earth, and I think the worms really help us. You know, we start to sterilize our lives and our world as we get older. We're more careful, we're more cautious, and I think somewhat we need to throw some of that to the wind and get a little dirt again, get our hands dirty.
I agree. Yeah. I agree completely. It's not, if you know that if you grab a handful of compost out in your yard, it's got... billions of organisms in
there. It's a little ecosystem all in itself.
And there's going to be insects, and there's going to be nematodes, and there's going to be bacteria, and there's going to be fungi, and there's going to be all this stuff.
And that's good.
It is. And it's not, it doesn't give you the, you know, creepy crawlies. It's, you don't even know they're there. It looks like dirt. It smells like dirt.
It does. It does. And yet, when you grab a handful of 1,000 worms, you know that they're there. Even myself, when I got into this, my first delivery of 1,000 worms, which is about a pound of worms, kind of freaked me out. I definitely squirmed a little bit when I first had
to... So you didn't just plunge your hand in there and pick them up, or did you?
I did, and then I kind of screamed and called my friend who introduced me to the worms and said, I don't know if I can do this after all. And she said, don't worry, the worms know what to do. Just relax, and, you know, it all started that way.
Worms are your friends.
Exactly, exactly.
They are your friends. You know what, I tell you what, Heather, this is about the time we should probably get Lynn in. Lynn's out in the studio, or in the green room. Let's get Lynn in here, Lynn Bement, while I continue to talk to Stephanie Davies, who is Urban Worm Girl. And how many of Urban Worm Girls are there now?
There are three of us now, so we're actually spreading out and reaching more people that way. There's been enough demand for us to be talking in schools and houses and clubs and individual homes that we now had to multiply.
So is that the idea of the organization, that you go out and you talk to clubs? I saw you, as I said, at Uncommon Ground. What's the business model for it? Yeah. What else do you do?
Well, our main goal is education. And what our target market is to educate just the average person, and especially the city dwellers. I think a lot of people historically have been familiar with composting and vermicomposting. But I don't think that the city dwellers, those people living in apartments and condos, and small houses in the city without large yards, really knew what they could do to contribute and to compost as well. So our goal was really just to bring this into the average household in the city and let people know how they could do this in a clean and efficient way in their own home.
So do you sell bins yourself, or do you...
Yeah, we do all of that. We sell a bin, a model that we like. We also can teach people how to build their own bins, or we can just come and show people what the worms do and introduce people to the concepts of the worms, or educate in the school systems where they already maybe have some bins going and teach the children a bit more. Or actually, one of the big things that's been happening is we're helping people troubleshoot with their bins. So people call us that maybe have bins for years or have run into a problem with their bin and they don't really know where to go. So they kind of do the SOS call, or like help call out to us, the hotline to the Worm Girls, and we can come and help figure out what's going on with your bin so people stay successful with their composting.
Well, of course, I've got the link up on my website, mikenovak.net. If you go to this week's show, you can get linked right to Urban Worm Girl, which is very easy. It's www.urbanwormgirl.com. When you say hotline, do you also have them call you? Is there a phone number?
Yeah, there's a phone number. People can call, and it's listed there on the website.
Oh, you can give it now.
Okay,
give it out.
Here we go. Don't call right now, though. I'm busy, okay? It's 312.
If your phone rings, yeah. We know why.
Okay, it's 312-399-4725. And so we definitely take calls, we take emails, and we do our best to get back to you as quick as possible. And then we can arrange for an in-home visit again, or just talk you through the problems. I find that there's a lot of hand-holding that needs to go on in the world of the worms. People get nervous. I like that Lynn's shaking her head here. She knows that that's true.
I also think it's funny that you say there's a lot of hand-holding that needs to go on in the world of the worms.
I told you it's a weird world, right? Working with worms
All
is
right.
a weird
well,
world.
That's about the time. That is Stephanie Davies, who's Urban Worm Girl. Sitting on her right is Lynn Bement, who's the Compost Queen. Compost Queen, meet Urban Worm Girl.
Nice
Urban
to
Worm
meet you,
Girl,
Lynn.
Meet Compost Queen. You gotta love it. On what other show in the whole city are you gonna get the Urban Worm Girl and the Compost Queen in the same room? Pull that mic towards you a little bit there, Lynn.
Okay.
I've known Lynn for a number of years now, and you know all about this because I've seen your worm bins as well.
Oh, yeah.
So you've done this, but you also do a lot of outdoor composting as well as vermicomposting indoors.
Correct. I have many compost areas.
What else is there? I mean, there's the indoor, there's the outdoor. What other specialties are there in composting?
Oh, the possibilities are endless. I mean, we should be taking all of that kind of organic matter in hospitals, in urban campuses, corporate campuses, and we should be turning it right back into compost and putting it right back on site.
You're saying should, but we're not.
It's not being done here. It's being done on the East Coast. It's being done on the West Coast.
We're just
sort of behind the times here in the Midwest.
Well, we just passed the food composting bill in the state of Illinois. How's that going to affect composting efforts?
Hopefully it will help a lot because it's been a real impediment.
Uh-huh. And part of the problem has been from what I understand, that transporting the materials is considered waste, and there's all kinds of regulations regarding that, and that it cost a fortune to set up a composting outfit. The licensing on it was just prohibitively high. Those kinds of things. Is that changing?
Well, however, you know, if we maintain and we manage that food waste and that green waste on site in any kind of situation, and we're good neighbors, we don't create a problem, we don't create an environment that's attracting rodents, we could be putting it right back on site. There's no reason to be trucking it from point A to point B.
Well, not everybody's got the space, though. Let's say, you've got a hospital, as you said. They don't always have a place to compost their material.
There are systems out there today that have very small footprints. And it's really more a matter of doing an inventory, understanding what volume you're creating. And the reality is when you start composting, what volume you start with and what you end up with is greatly diminished.
All right, well, let's go back to the beginning. That's Lynn Bement, who is sometimes known as the Compost Queen, but her business, you don't just call yourself Compost Queen. I know you call your business the Organic Garden Coach. Why don't you just change it to Compost Queen, since that's the URL anyway? That's, the address of it is www.compostqueen.com. Just call yourself Compost Queen. Is there anybody else out there? Have you checked to see if anybody else has used that name?
Well, when I got the, I think it was my website or my
the Internet Service Provider?
Yeah, the Internet, ISP.
ISP.
There were other compost queens out there, apparently.
Oh, you were.
So when I finally got the name and it became available, I was like, why not? I've been joking about myself being the compost queen for 20 years.
I think you just changed the name. Because the Organic Garden Coach just doesn't sell it. Compost Queen, bingo. Hey, listen, what's the book title we're doing? Wisdom of the Worms?
Mm-hmm.
All right,
mm-hmm.
Now, I want 5% of yours, too, as well, Lynn. So, since I'm giving you everybody these great ideas. That is the Compost Queen, Lynn Bement. She is in studio with Urban Worm Girl, Stephanie Davies. We're, in a few minutes, we'll bring in Christine Nye from the Shedd Aquarium and Charles Martin from Terrabiotics in New Mexico. But I want to start at the beginning, since I have you two here, with the basics. I mean, we kind of jumped into this and said, oh, yeah, you can compost, you can put worms in your basement, you can put worms in a bin. But people starting out, they want to know, not everybody, because a lot of people who listen to my show know what composting is, but other people would, that's a great idea, Heather. 773-838-9278. If you've got a question about composting, and you've always wanted to ask, call. We've got the experts in the studio, 773-838-WCPT. But the basics are putting in green material, putting in brown material. Folks don't necessarily understand what that means. Who wants to start here?
Well, I think, Lynn, if the question is about the green material and the brown material, that's about a compost queen question.
Well, it's all good stuff. I mean, the reality is you can compost anything that was once living. So that's everything from paper, cardboard, all of that stuff was at one time a tree. So think of all of that waste. Think of how much paper waste we have that comes into our homes that we could be shredding. And by the way, that makes really good worm bedding.
Mm-hmm.
So don't toss that stuff. Don't recycle it. Stick it in your compost pile. Because if you have a lot of green waste, if you have a lot of food waste, and you have a lot of yard waste that is green, then you want all that carbon with it. Because that carbon is really, those leaves that are dead, they're now carbon. They're not nitrogen anymore. When they become brown leaves, they are carbon.
So, so you need a ratio of carbon and nitrogen. And what's the ratio that you like?
It's not important, the ratios, particularly if you're going to do cold composting.
What's cold composting?
Okay, cold composting means that you are going to take whatever you've got as you get it, and you're going to let it naturally compost. It's going to take longer.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to put in anything that has disease on it. You're not going to put in anything that has gone to seed, particularly weed seeds, because you're only going to propagate them in your landscape. So what you want to do is you want to just add everything that you have and give it time. And it may be a year, it may be 2 years, depending on particle size, because if the particle size is small, it will decompose faster. It has more surface area. If the particle size is larger, it takes longer to decompose. The problem, the challenge is that most people don't want to fool with hot composting. Hot composting means you do need to pay attention to the ratios of carbon to nitrogen, and you do need to have a soil thermometer, and you do need to be checking what you're doing in terms of temperature, because that's the only way you're going to kill those weed seeds and those pathogens. So if you've got issues like that going on, you do not want to be putting in those disease sorts of plants, and you don't want to be putting in those weed seeds.
But you're saying, you can put, if you hot compost, you can destroy.
Throw it all in there.
Yeah. But if you're cold composting, that's where you got to be careful.
Yes, you do.
You can even put disease plants into hot composting?
Well, there's not a problem as long as you're maintaining a hot compost pile, mm-hmm. and you're doing it, you know, by the book, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to turn that pile several times. So even the material that's on the outside of that pile that hasn't achieved temperature is going to get thrown into the middle of that pile every time you turn it.
Mm-hmm.
You are taking basically what's on the outside, which didn't achieve that temperature of, say, 140, 145, 150 degrees, because it's the inside of the pile that's that hot. It's not the outside. So.
And how big does a pile have to be to heat up to 140 degrees or whatever?
You can't be any smaller than 3 feet by 3 feet. You're not going to achieve temperature, and you shouldn't be any larger than 5 by 5, 6 by 6, because it can collapse on itself, and then you're going to lose the air pockets that are in there, and you need that air to achieve that temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Read my article in Fine Gardening.
Well, Lynn has an article in Fine Gardening. You didn't bring me a copy, did you?
Oops, I didn't.
See?
I thought you got it.
No, I don't have a subscription. I have Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. That's mine, because I write for it.
But it's the December issue of Fine Gardening, and it really just goes through compost methods. So it talks about vermicomposting, because vermicomposting is awesome for somebody who lives in an apartment, mm-hmm. who doesn't have space, who has a smaller area.
Heather, she's pointing to herself. All right, so we've got the hot composting. So Lynn says, really, and I kind of agree with you. I mean, I've never done hot composting myself, but in terms of cold composting, you really don't need to. They always telling you get started on composting. Oh, you have to have 5-to-1 ratio or 30-to-1 ratio of green to brown or the other way around, and you're just saying just put all your compostable materials together and make sure you keep turning them.
Correct. And if you don't turn them, then ultimately they're going to become compost anyway. The reality is at least if you start a pile, and this time of year is awesome because you have all this wonderful stuff that's coming down. We have all these leaves. Don't get rid of your one leaf, because that makes wonderful compost.
Right. Folks who bag their leaves and have them put in the garbage, again, those are people you want to smack around a little bit, because come on, at least give them to somebody who's going to compost them. I go down the block, and if I can, I'll steal people's bags of leaves and drag them into my backyard and throw them in the compost pile.
Because you know, Mike, that even if that pile is 10 feet high, without doing anything to it, look at it a month later, and it's already been reduced by several feet.
You can even do it. It's slower, but you can even. If you grab a plastic bag that's filled with leaves, and you poke some holes in it, and you let the elements get in, some water get in there, and drain out, it's almost a real passive, just kind of leave that over the winter, and then pull that out in the spring, and it's halfway on its way to decomposing, and, you know, she's going, nah. But I've done it, and it's amazing how fast it decomposes the stuff does. But the best thing is, if you can, chop them up. Throw them in your yard, throw them in your compost pile.
even if you don't chop them and you don't feel like doing that, you know, you don't want to run over them with a lawnmower. You just want to put them in a pile. Just put up some metal stakes and chicken wire, and you can, you know, let them sit there and do their thing over the winter.
All right. Our phone number is 773-838-9278. Give us a call if you got a question about composting. We have Lynn Bement, the compost queen, in the studio. We have Stephanie Davies, who is Urban Worm Girl. I just like saying those things. All right, let's go to line one and Ann. How are you, Ann? You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, good morning. I'm fine, thank you. I wanted to ask, what do we do with our compost piles over the wintertime? Do we still keep adding foodstuffs to it?
That's an excellent question. Lynn, what would you say?
Well, it depends on whether you feel like trudging across your backyard when the snow is deep and the temperatures are cold. I honestly started doing vermicomposting 20 years ago because I got tired of trudging across my backyard when it was freezing cold outside.
Yeah, a lot of our customers do the same thing. They transfer to a worm bin during the cold seasons here in Chicago. So they supplement their outdoor composting with an indoor bin. So it's a nice alternative during the winter months.
Ann, is that something you would even consider, a vermicomp?
Yes, because I don't like to throw away, you know, the banana peels and the orange skins and the apple peels, things like that. I don't like to put it in the garbage, and I have someone that saves coffee grounds for me, and I put coffee grounds in there and things like that. And then in the wintertime, we always say, well, what do we do with this? What do we do with it?
Well, the worms would love it.
Well, I'll tell you,
could we put something in a garage that's not heated?
Well, I was just going to turn it over to Stephanie for a second. How would you get somebody like Ann started on vermicomposting?
Well, it is important to decide where you would want to have your bin. So a garage is an option, but during the cold winter months, you would at least need to insulate that bin around the outsides of that bin or cover it. Some form of insulation would keep the worms healthy, but if the worm bin were to get too cold, they wouldn't actually be eating, or they'd actually possibly die. So a garage is possible if you properly insulated a bin, or else a basement is a really good idea if you have something like that, a storage closet, a laundry room. You can really find a very small bin that would fit somewhere, possibly even in your home. Mine sits actually in my kitchen next to my kitchen cabinet. So there are possibilities there for where you want to put your bin, and then deciding the kind of bin, whether you want to build your own or buy a commercial bin. And then it's just about getting your worms and getting started.
Worms in the kitchen.
Worms in the kitchen. At least 1,000 probably, and maybe even more depending on the size of your family.
Just me.
Just you?
Well, there you go.
Then it's going to be an easy way to start.
So but this is a way to get friends. You'll have many, many friends, the little worm friends.
Or people will come over to see your worms. That's how it started for me. A friend invited me to see her worms, and my world has changed since then. So you never know where this could take you.
I'm going to have to research this.
Well, Anne, here's how you research it. Go online to urbanwormgirl.com. Lynn, can she go to your website as well?
You can go to my website as well, which is compostqueen.com. You could also pick up a book, which I think is the Bible on worm composting, by Mary Appelhoff, called Worms Eat My Garbage.
It was the first book I read, and I go back to it all the time as well, so I highly recommend that as well.
So, and that's where I would start, Ann, and you can jump in any time. That's the great thing about vermicomposting. It doesn't require a season at all. It's just you, whatever time you feel you're ready for, you go out and buy the stuff, you get your worms, you get your bedding for them, and you start throwing in your garbage, basically. And
the worms know what to do. They take care of the rest. So if we create an atmosphere for them to work, they're very efficient.
I appreciate you calling, Ann. Good luck.
Could I ask one more question really quickly?
Sure, yeah.
What are you supposed to do? Right now I have my compost in a black bin that I had got from the city of Chicago. And do I just leave that sit over the winter?
Oh, yeah, no problem. It's one of the bins that sit on the ground. There's nothing on
right.
the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No problem. You can still be adding stuff to that, too, even in the winter. It just means that it's going to be pretty stagnant. Not a lot's going to happen with it through the winter months.
So I don't have to try and be out there trying to turn it or anything?
Oh, no. And in a black bin like that, you're really not going to be turning it that way. You're basically cold composting in a bin of that sort.
Yeah, it's very hard to turn it out.
Yeah.
It's like my pitchfork and trying to get down in there, but it's
well, what I, what I recommend in the article I just wrote was that black bins like that are easier if you pick up the bin, you move them to a spot right next to where it is, and you fork everything over, because then what's at the bottom of that bin is very good material, and you could be using that in your garden.
Okay. All right. Thank you so
much. Well, Ann, do me a favor. If you get going on this, let me know, and let me know how it works out.
I sure will.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 773-838-WCPT is our telephone number. We're talking compost on the Mike Novak Show. Let's go to line two, and Rob is in Palatine. How you doing, Rob?
I'm good. How you doing?
All right.
Three questions.
Sure.
First question. How do you compost weeds? Because that seems like that's all I've got.
Well, you got your green material there then, right?
Oh, and how?
Well, Lynn?
Well, you got a couple of choices. There's a book out there, another book out there on composting that says you should treat them as you treat, like, I call them a hospital pile.
Okay.
And you really need to make those heat up to temperature. And what they recommend in that particular book is put them in a bag. Not this time of year. You're probably not going to have much luck. But a plastic bag where they really heat.
Okay.
The other option you'd have would be to do trench composting, where you're digging holes and burying them.
Okay.
And that's a good thing to do in an area where it's also, you know, it's a good thing to do in an area where you maybe want to have a garden down the road. And it's not something you're ever going to be wanting to dig up again, because you don't want to have those weed seeds up and possibility of growing.
Okay.
So you could be doing trench composting and then covering it with decent soil.
What I have been doing is drying them out. Does that do any good, or is that just drying them out?
Seeds are very prolific.
Yeah. Okay.
They just, you know, if they're happy campers, they get enough light, they get enough moisture, they're going to germinate.
Cool. Second question. What kind of worm?
That's a good question, because all worms are not created equal.
This is very true. There's many species of worms, and not all of them are really, their job is not necessarily composting. So
even if you do find them in the compost pile,
yeah,
that, you know, as you will in an outdoor pile, mm-hmm, you will find the big earthworms, but
sure,
those are not the ones that are doing the bulk of the work.
They're not doing, they're aerators more. The bigger, fatter worms, mm-hmm, tend to be aerators, so their job is to move soil and to move through and aerate the earth or the compost pile. But the ones that really are doing the eating are actually pretty small worms called red wigglers. Those are the best kind, and those are actually smaller and a little bit narrow and reddish in color, and they're just going to continuously eat and eat and eat and multiply, which is also very helpful.
So I can throw the red worms into my cold compost, and that'll be a nice sympathetic relationship, right? Everybody will be happy.
It will, however, there are some, they may not want to tunnel quite the same way as other worms outside, if you're throwing them into an outdoor compost bin.
Okay.
Or an outside heap of some sort. Because red wigglers, Asinia fitida, are really happy to live in a box, reproduce, and eat your food waste.
Wait.
Not
say
everybody
that again.
Else is.
Say that again.
Asinia fitida is
fitida.
The red wiggler.
And she's giving the botanical name of, you know, it just
which
goes
I'm afraid to say, because I know I'd mispronounce it.
Well, I probably mispronounced it, too. I know Asinia's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, and I interrupted. I just wanted to, because some people would go, huh, what did she say?
Well, there are a lot of different worms out there, as Stephanie was saying, and I know I've been asked many times when people run across worms in their garden and whether they can use those for composting in a bin, and I said, it's not going to be the same thing. You don't know what you have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some worms like to take their food somewhere else to eat it, and you don't really want that when you have a worm bin. You want your worms to stay where they are and eat, so worms have different behavior, and mm-hmm, so you want the right worm for a worm bin.
So if I go to urbanwormgirl.com, there's your plug.
Thank you.
Hey, good job, pal. Well, are you in the media?
I'm professional. In any event, do you delineate the kind of worm for the kind of application, or is this something that I email you and describe to you what I'm looking for and you'd be able to recommend and I'd be able to purchase?
What we do is we primarily work with red wigglers. So we're kind of advocates of the red wiggler for composting, and we can give you all the information you need about them and where to find them or to supply them to you. If you wanted worms for different purposes, that would be another a source that we could send you to.
Okay. Cool. Very cool. Now, here's my third question. It's for Mike.
All right.
Mike?
Yes?
My yard's a mess.
Yes?
I have a dandelion field. Where grass used to be.
Yes.
I've been trying to be as low impact in terms of what I do to my yard as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And my soil is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's spongy, silty garbage. This used to be a race course in Palatine, believe it or not. There was a race course here.
Wait, you were your land is where a race course was?
Yeah, it was where the fairgrounds were.
Wow.
And this is where the race course was 80 years ago. In any event, I have nothing but dandelions,
mm-hmm.
with little patches of non-dandelions.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get rid of them? I know how I get rid of the Creeping Charlie. I've been doing it because of your show. Thank you very much.
Oh.
But dandelions, they're just, you know, resilient. And
well, you know, it seems to me it's kind of the same thing. Lynn, you're welcome to jump in here anytime.
Okay. Have you had your soil tested?
No, I have not had my soil tested.
I'd highly suggest you get at least a chemistry test. Chemistry tests are pretty inexpensive, and at least find out whether you're in balance, because my sense is you've got some things there that are a little out of whack if you've got that many dandelions.
Okay, so number one, get my soil tested.
You bet.
Once tested, what do I do?
Well, so that'll tell you, because it might be if you're lacking certain nutrients, you apply those and you would have fewer dandelions. For instance, as far as I know, dandelions indicate a calcium deficiency in your soil.
I agree.
And it might be that the recommendation is to use
bone meal?
No, gypsum.
Gypsum.
But you may not necessarily want gypsum if your sulfur is also, if your sulfur is high. Because if you've got low calcium and high sulfur, then gypsum is sulfur and calcium, you don't want to be putting the sulfur down.
Yeah, so first thing, soil test. Next thing, always a good idea, organic matter. You know, compost would be, I would always recommend incorporating compost into a yard. But the first thing is you got to know what imbalances you have.
Gotcha.
And
you can also do one other wild and crazy thing, depending on how big your landscape is. You can do something like lasagna gardening. And there's a book out that's called Lasagna Gardening. It's basically like sheet composting. And you can take corrugated, you know, like from cartons,
mm-hmm.
or newspaper, and basically lay it down right on top of the weeds and everything. Lay good quality compost on top of it. Put all your chopped up leaves on it. Put a layer of, bark or mulch, you know, woody mulch.
Mm-hmm.
And in spring, you'll be able to plant right into it.
Oh, sweet. Cool.
It works really good this time of year.
And that's all stuff I can do right now. Great. Wonderful. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for calling. Good luck. Let me know how it goes, Rob. Okay.
I will. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Scotty is on the line. We'll get to Scotty in a... Is that a man or a woman, Scotty?
That's a man.
A man, Scotty. But we need to get Christine and...
Martin.
Charles Martin on the line. We will do that, and we'll get back to our compost discussion. And, Scotty, we will get to you. We're coming up on the holiday season, and guess who has the goods on the November-December issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine? That little old tipster, me. And what would a holiday issue be without some tips on easy, fabulous, and inexpensive decorative ideas for the season? My editor, Carolyn Ulrich, has pages and pages of inspiration. And have you ever heard of the term permaculture? Beth Botts, who occasionally co-hosts this show, explains what it means and how anybody can walk the permaculture walk. And a lot of you might know about the Joliet Arsenal. It's not there anymore. Well, it kind of is, but it's not about ammunition. The 19,000-acre acres there are slowly but surely being turned into Medewin tall grass prairie. The full story is in Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Of course, there's the regular features like what to do in the garden, your gardening questions, and the regional reports. And now you can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine all over Chicagoland. In fact, more than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. And get your voice warmed up. My annual Holiday Hort Sing-Along features your favorite carols with gardening lyrics. It's enough to make your blood run cold. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine today, or better yet, subscribe. Find it on the web at chicagolandgardening.com, or give the office a call during business hours, 866-806-1498. Tell them that Mike sent you.
Conserve energy. Save money. Think CETA. Tip 1. Turn your computer off every night and when you're on vacation to reduce energy costs. Tip 2. Charging adds charges. After charging, unplug cell phones, iPods, and other battery-operated devices. You may be eligible through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act for home weatherization at no cost to you. For more information, call CETA at 1-800-571-CEDA or visit CETA.org.net.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Trees are a good investment. According to some studies, a single tree in the front yard adds 1% to the sale price. In one instance, a court determined the loss of a large black oak tree was worth $15,000, or 9% of the property. A few trees properly planted around a house can cut energy costs anywhere from 6.5% to 25%, according to some studies. A row of windbreak trees can reduce wind speed by 85%. That's really going to make a difference in heating costs come January. And Edith Macra, community trees advocate for the Morton Arboretum, who has been on this very program, says that for every dollar you spend on a large shade tree shading the west wall of your home, you get almost 7 times the return. If you want to preserve that investment, you should make the Care of Trees your permanent... Actually, that was seven times a return. I'll get to that later. If you want to preserve that investment, you should make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. I told the witch doctor I was in love with you. And then the witch doctor, he told me what to do. He said that...
And... What's this guy's Ross?
David Seville.
Mm-hmm. Pre Chipmunks. This is how the Chipmunks develop out of the Witch Doctor song. I forget his real name, David Seville, but this is where it came from. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. Do we have Christine online? Can I see? The screen there, producer lady. Thank you, producer lady. In the studio, Lynn Vement and Stephanie Davies on line one. Christine Nye, how are you, Christine?
I'm toasty. How are you?
Toasty.
Toasty.
You'd be in if you were in the studio, too.
Sounds lovely.
Christine Nye is a horticulturist at the Shed Aquarium. And the reason she's on the show is because she knows a little bit about the subject we're going to kind of segue into here. In fact, let's go to line two and bring in Charles Martin. How you doing, Charles?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Great. Charles, you're in New Mexico, right?
Yes.
And Charles has been doing this kind of thing, dealing with compost and its products, I guess, for, about 40 years?
Yeah, longer than I'd like to remember.
And one of those products is something that folks may have heard of. Oh, before we get that, we had a call. We lost Scotty. But Scotty's question was, you know, some people tell him he can put certain wastes in and not others. And that's really a good point. Lynn, do you want to address that real quick?
Well, depending on where he's composting, whether it's indoors, outdoors, you really want to be careful about meat products. You don't want to be attracting critters, and you could be attracting critters. It's not as though they don't decompose just fine, but you want to be a good neighbor, and
same
you don't
thing
want to attract critters.
What's dairy, the deal on dairy?
Dairy is also not a good thing to be putting in, but depending on how active your piles are and how much you're on it, how much experience you've had, you can, you know, get away with some of those things. But as a new composter, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, so stick with base breads.
Fruits,
what
vegetables,
about?
Fruits, vegetables, rotten bread, pasta, you know, coffee grounds, tea bags, dog hair, cat hair, lint from your dryer, it all, sweepings from your floor, it all disappears. Mm.
And leaves.
Oh, we went through the leaves. Obviously, you weren't listening, Christine.
I can't get you out here, you know?
You're in Crystal Lake, right?
I'm in McHenry, beyond Crystal Lake.
Beyond Crystal Lake. Ooh, you know? We got to get a signal. Yeah, how about streaming us?
Well, I'm here at the computer thinking about doing that. But,
it occurs
so
to you.
It's kind of pointless, isn't it?
How long have I known you, Christine?
Wait, we shouldn't go there.
Okay. All right. One of the other things you can do with compost, and I'm not going to get into a whole discussion about the soil food web, but as we said earlier, there's all kinds of critters in compost. There's bacteria, there's fungi, there's nematodes, there's protozoa, there's insects, there's worms, it just goes on and on. And
for the most part, all of those are good guys.
Yeah, and they're all good guys. That's the other thing, folks. They are the good guys. When we think of bugs and we think of nematodes and those things, we think bad guys. But
well, some of those guys are bad
guys,
some of
them
but
are.
The percentage is very small.
Mm-hmm.
If we have aerobic conditions, if we are keeping good oxygen, we're not becoming soppy and wet and dense, then we've got air.
And I hope you all agree with me that when you use compost, what's so beneficial about it really is, well, one of the things is the biology that we
you
just talked
bet.
About. That when you
bet.
Put it in your yard, when you put it in on your lawn, wherever you use it, you're adding biology. Now, one of the ways that folks have figured out in the last decade or so to use that biology effectively is to create something called compost tea, which some of you who are listening might have heard of. And Charles Martin, I'm going to ask you to give us a simple explanation of what compost tea is. Charles, by the way, is with Terra Biotics, and as I said, has been doing this a long time. How would you describe compost tea?
Well, compost tea is basically a very dilute mix of compost. So it's kind of like putting compost in a tea bag. And
hence the phrase compost tea.
Exactly. And the key to it is the air that is generated through that bag and actually oxidizes some of the nutrition that's in that bag and carbon compounds that help this biology to live.
Okay, and there are certain things that are done with compost tea. The water's room temperature, right?
Right.
And you have to make sure you get the chemicals out of the water. It's got to be either distilled or you've got to find a way to gas off things like chlorine.
Well, generally you can, prior to adding your compost material to that, your tea maker, if you will simply have air go through it for a period of time, you have to, according to how dense your chlorine is in your water in your local area, it'll burn off the chlorine in most cases.
All right, yeah, and that's something we can talk about, too, which is there are kits now. You know, the idea is that you bubble your water, you brew your tea by bubbling the water with the compost, and you have some sugars in there or an accelerant or a catalyst, however you want to call it.
Food for your critters.
Food for the organisms that are in the compost. You're providing food for them.
You want to grow them.
You can buy these bubblers. It's like an aquarium bubbler, except that it's you use it slightly differently, and you brew this tea for 12 hours or 24 hours or sometimes up to 36 hours.
Particularly with cooler temperatures.
And you create this tea, and then you apply it. And the thing I think folks get confused about, they think, well, then you're fertilizing your yard, your garden. You're not. This is not fertilizer. This is
biology.
Is biology, right? As I always say in my talks, it's the biology, stupid. And it is. This is biology you're putting in.
I try to remind people when I'm talking about compost tea that when we witness the diversity that's on this side of the soil, we have to remember that the diversity below is even more than what we witness up here, and we're trying to encourage that because diversity is what keeps it all in balance.
That's a really good point, and you're adding that diversity to your garden.
Right.
Now, there's a question about what is the best kind of compost tea, and we're at a point where it's a fairly new technology. It's a fairly new kind of product. Lynn, I know you like to apply it, and Christine, maybe you can tell me the same thing. I know you guys like to apply it right after you brew it, and you brew it yourselves.
Yeah, I brew it myself. I've been doing it for, I don't know, about 10 years now.
And you do it, and you're applying it to the grounds of the Shedd Aquarium.
That's all I use is compost and compost tea at the aquarium.
I apply it there, too.
And that's right. You guys work together at the Shedd Aquarium applying it. I know that you've employed Lynn to brew compost tea and apply it, and I know you brew some yourself, too.
Well, she comes down and does my lawn because to apply it to a lawn is much more tea than I have the capacity to brew, and she's got a 250-gallon brewer. Mine's around 30 gallons. So I use it for ornamentals and for smaller applications where I'll put it on my trees, and I like to spray it on foliarly as well to get some competitive biology going on the leaves when I have problems.
Yeah, so you put it on the trees, you put it on your lawn. I've seen pictures, you compare pictures of the trees on the Field Museum campus to the ones on the Shedd Aquarium, and they're using traditional fertilizing methods, and you're using compost tea on yours, and your trees are healthier.
Yeah, we have trees that we put in on both sides of a sidewalk, and I turned some of them over to the Field Museum at one point to keep it easy for their people to understand which side, which trees to apply chemicals to and which not to after some run-ins with them. And yes, you can go down and witness that, how our trees are doing much better.
Yeah, all you got to do is stand on the sidewalk between the Field Museum and the Shedd Aquarium, look at the trees, because they're same kind of trees on both sides, right?
Right, red maples.
Red maples. And go, and they were planted all at the same time, is that correct?
Yeah, they're all from the same lot. They were all planted at the same time.
So you can see how they've grown differently over the years. This is just one way to do this. Now, Christine and Lynn, you like applying your compost tea immediately after brewing it, pretty much, within hours, right?
Correct.
At least within hours,
because
24 hours.
And because if it's an August day and it's really hot outside, that tea, after I stop brewing it, after I stop putting air into it and aerating it, it's going to start losing oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And so as it starts losing oxygen, I may start changing the biology, which is just the matter of it's just a fact. It just happens. So when the temperature is hotter, you know, you really want to apply it ASAP.
Now, Charles, you've been working on a product called Instant BioTea and perhaps others that you say you can bottle and use effectively as a compost tea. Can you tell me about those products?
Well, let's just talk about the Instant BioTea. Basically, what we've done is taking all the components for a good tea and concentrate it and stabilize it in a non-chemical fashion, to where it's stabilized in a bottle, and then it can be diluted 40-1 and put into a compost tea maker. But one of the things I'd like to visit about, and I can go back to this, is that one of the things that your folks ought to recognize is that trees require a different level of biology than grass does.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Grass is more bacterial dominated. Shrubs are kind of half and half, and trees are fungal dominated. Now, one of the things in developing this product we found, and it took us about 3 years of failure to recognize this, and you ladies probably figured this out a lot sooner than I did, is that the longer you brew it, the more fungi you get in your tea. That was one of our missing factors.
And protozoa.
And well, so we found that when we started getting up into the...
Hold on, Christine.
Sorry. Go ahead.
But go ahead, Christine.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, what Charles is saying is true, but you also have to remember that the tea goes through cycles depending on where you are in the cycle, depending on what the food levels are as well. I agree about how I always have to brew my tea longer to get more fungi, but... You know,
all right, now before we get totally over the heads of our listeners here, all right, because this is turning into really arcane discussion about protozoa and fungi or fungi, however you want, and bacterial content. The point is, the first point you got to make is you can brew these teas at home. There are kits, all right? You can also get somebody, hire somebody to apply a compost tea. And yes, it does make a difference what kind of product you have, but it's just like fertilizer. It makes a difference what you have in your fertilizer. So for those folks whose eyes are glazing over right now, I just want to say it's really not as complex as you think. Anytime you apply a product, you've got to have a sense of what it is. You've got to read the label, all right? And you've got to know what you're applying to your garden. Charles, I'm interested in, and that makes sense, and I know Lynn knows it, I know that Christine knows it, we know about the difference between using fungal kinds of teas and bacterial-based. If it's got more bacteria in it, it's great for a lawn. If it's got more fungi in it, then it's great for trees. And as you said, it runs the gamut, and there's a spectrum of that. But I was interested in the when you said the Terrabiotic products, instant bio tea. Were you saying that you put that into a brewing system, or do you apply that directly to the soil?
We can do it either way, but it's more effective if it's brewed, because the biology is activated. If it's applied by itself, then it has to be activated in the soil.
All right, well, the question I have then, because here's what folks want. Okay. They don't want to brew. They don't want to get a bubbler and put it in their garage and do that. They don't want to hire somebody to brew it. I'm just talking about the way folks are. They want to go into the Walmart, and they want to pick up something off a shelf and apply it. Are we at that point yet?
Okay, hold on 1 second.
Well, I'm not sure that the Walmart are ready for this kind of product, because there is a level of education that's required. And it's really difficult to put that on a label.
It is. And maybe it wasn't even fair to say the Walmarts, but let's say even really good garden centers. You know, are they... I know that they have certain kinds of products out there, and some people worry that they're just brown water in a jug and that you're being taken to the cleaners. You know, it's told...
Sure.
Some of the products that have been out there, and Christine can chime in on this one. Christine has tested some of these products, and that's all that they were. Not very good.
No biology. I'm not saying that Charles is this, but, you know, Charles, I think it's interesting you make the comment about a level of education being necessary for people to use these products. But yet, we don't think that a level of education is needed for people to use chemical products. People don't read the label no matter what you give them.
Yeah.
So I find that interesting, because... You know, if we're gonna condemn compost tea because people need to know what they're doing, then we have to condemn the whole industry.
Hey, listen, I'm on your page there, Christine. I tell folks, and I say this when I say it on the radio, and I say when I go to garden clubs, if they say, "Should I spray?" I say, "No." Because you know why? You're not going to read the label direction. You're not going to know why you're buying that product in the first place. And if you don't know, I don't want you touching it. And, you know, and it makes, you know, extension educators crazy when I say stuff like that, because they read the label directions. But I know the average public, when they buy Roundup, they don't know if it's extended Roundup or something else on the shelf. They have no idea what's been added into that thing.
So I could say that people using tea at least would do less harm if they didn't read the label.
Right.
But
you know what? And I have to tell you, so if we got in about 30 seconds, where, if people want more education on compost tea, can they go?
I go to the Soil Food website, soilfoodweb.com. There's a lot of papers written by Dr. Elaine Ingham. There's a tremendous amount of information there.
And I know that, Charles, you worked with Dr. Elaine Ingham as well.
Oh, actually, I know Lynn very well. She's a Food Web colleague and a very respected one at that.
So it's one happy family here, you know? Soilfoodweb, .com. And you know, and the other thing you can do is just go to your search engine, type in Soil Food Web, start reading it, type in compost teas, lots of website that'll explain it to you. It's really good stuff. It's in its infancy, not as much scientific data on it as we'd like, and that's something that we also need, isn't it, Lynn?
Yes, it is, but I'll tell you, going back to the same old thing we have discussed many times before, Mike, I think it's just important people learn to compost. You can't get in as much trouble with compost as you can get in with tea.
There you go.
Because if you are brewing something that you don't have enough oxygen in, you could be brewing pathogens. If you're putting a foliar down and you've got pathogens in there, you might be doing more harm. You can't do as much harm with the compost.
I think that's a really good point. I've got to run. Charles Martin, I've got your website on this week's show on MikeNovak.net. Thank you so much. Christine Nye, I've got links there. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you both for being on board. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye. And Urban Worm Girl, Stephanie Davies, thank you. Lynn Bement, thank you. All their information is on my website. I hope you go there. It's almost Halloween, and there's no doubt that fall is here and winter's not far behind. Your friends at Sid's Greenhouses want to remind you that, you can save 25%. On greenhouse plants from SIDS. You know, you stop growing the stuff outside, you want to start growing it inside? Head over to SIDS, where you can get tropicals, lucky bamboo, herbs, and exotics, plus decorative ceramic pots and pottery to give your indoor garden a new look. They're buy one, get one free. SIDS has hundreds of styles and colors available. This week, you'll also save 75% off their entire stock of indoor fall and Halloween decor. And check out SIDS Christmas Shop, which is 30% off this week. SIDS Chicagoland's premier garden centers are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassard Boulevard. And you know, I love SIDS because that's a place you can take back your plastics to be recycled.